Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 147 for March 12th, 2010. Now, more random. Windows Weekly is brought to you by GoToMeeting. Business travel can kill your company's profits. So do more, save more, and travel less with GoToMeeting. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMeeting.com/WindowsWeekly. And by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show that covers everything going on in Microsoft land. In fact, he's there right now in Microsoft land in the belly of the beast, Mr. Paul Thurrott, editor-in-chief of the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com.
And hello, sir.
Winsupersite.com. And he's also the author of Windows 7 Secrets, just out from Wiley & Sons. Hello, Paul.
Hello.
What brings you to the west coast of the United States?
I can't discuss that, Leo.
Oh, a secret mission.
Well, there are some things I can discuss and some I cannot. For example, I'm going to meet Rob Greenlee this week.
Oh, our good friend who makes sure that we are on the Zune in the Zune marketplace.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Rob, for that.
I can talk about that, I think. Yeah. I think that's on the up and up.
Well, and yeah, he's on that's a good team to be on right now. Zune is hot in Microsoft land. Is he not? Is it not?
Well, how define hot, Leo?
Well, I'm looking at the Courier running the Zune OS. I'm looking at the Windows 7 Phone series.
Mm-hmm.
Did I say that right? Zune OS.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the Blades on the Xbox 360. Seem to be heavily influenced by. I mean, the Zune is.
There's stuff we can discuss and stuff we cannot. But let's just say that there is stuff coming.
Ooh, that's a code. That's code. If I can only decipher the code. Well, tell us, dear, what are you... So you're meeting with people at Microsoft. How many times a year do you do these briefings?
Well, I do this all the time. I mean, as far as coming out here, I don't do it as much as I used to because now we do it virtually a lot. And they come to my house sometimes, of course.
This would be a good time for a GoToMeeting commercial.
But I can't believe I just said we do it virtually sometimes.
We do it virtually.
Anyway,
so. As long as you do it virtuously, it's okay if you do it virtually.
Sure. I don't think it's giving anything away major for me to say that I will be writing a Windows phone book this year. And one of the things I probably will be doing is...
That's an announcement.
Yeah, I think so.
How exciting.
I guess so.
So you're this excited about Windows Phone 7?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you should be.
I think that's the point. So, you know, as I get older, I don't get as excited. And
well, there's a pill for that.
About things. But I, yeah, you know, this has had the same effect on me that, you know, Media Center had on me when I first saw that years and years ago. And, you know, some other things. I mean, it's every once in a while, you know, you get that little jump start, kick in the ass kind of moment. And I think Windows Phone is going to be at least a pretty big deal.
You love how it's the UI. It's that Metro UI you like, huh?
Yeah.
What else?
Well, there's all kinds of stuff. I mean, so I finally got to play around with it, you know, hands-on today.
Mm-hmm.
And what I saw today was literally a day-old build of the OS. It had some new stuff in it that wasn't in... you know, the stuff they showed off publicly. And, you know, I keep waiting for that moment, you know, that kind of wah, 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 you know, where it all falls out at the bottom, you know. But so far, so good. You know, Windows Phone 7 to me seems like the real deal.
Wow. You've handled it. You've made a call with it. It's been in your hand.
Yeah, and actually that was one of the things, you know, it was funny. When I was working up the very first, table of contents for the book, you know, what might be in the book. You know, one of the sections I had at the end is called, oh, and it's a phone, too. You know, we kind of forget right. about that stuff.
Right.
And, of course, they didn't really show that off at the launch event. And that was one of the things that we looked at. And, I can verified that it makes phone calls.
Wow.
as you might expect. You know?
Wow.
So, yeah, it does.
So cool. So cool.
Yeah.
Very exciting. I don't want to. You're just going to say, I can't talk about that. I presume.
No. I think as far as Windows Phone 7 goes, I can talk about specifically.
Okay.
So, I guess I think the thing that's interesting about it, and I think when you make any comparison between phones, you know, if you look at the landscape as it is today, obviously the iPhone was a huge, huge deal when it first came out because it was so dramatically better than anything else. And by the way, is still better than virtually everything else. I think that the Android platform is running neck and neck with the iPhone right now. But, you know, the Android system, of course, is influenced very heavily by the iPhone as well. Right. So when you look at the functionality, when you look at the App Store and all the stuff, you know, Android and the iPhone, I think, are very similar. And I have to give Microsoft some credit for not just doing the same old thing again, you know. And I do believe that their approach to the way that you organize information and access information on the phone, where you're not just tunneling into an app, doing that one thing and then tunneling out and doing the next thing, and I think is really innovative and shows an interesting flaw in the iPhone that I don't think was immediately obvious to everyone. You know, 6 months ago, I don't think anyone would have pointed to this as such an obvious flaw. But in the same way that the iPhone betrayed, you know, the lack of innovation elsewhere in the industry, I think Windows Phone 7 has some interesting ideas of its own that also show where there are flaws elsewhere. So, for example, if you want to access information about a contact of yours, a friend of yours, someone in your family, or you know, on the iPhone, you have to think in terms of the applications you would use to access that information. So I want to see what my friend is doing, so I'll go into Facebook, you know, that kind of thing. You know, on Windows Mobile, it's you don't deal with it on an app level. You deal with it on sort of what they're calling, you know, an experience level, if you will, or a hub level or whatever, where you can go into, you know, the contact card for somebody and see all of that stuff that they're doing online from different services all aggregated in one place. And when you see it arranged in that way, it seems so obvious. And it also seems obvious that the other ways of doing it are really kind of primitive by comparison. So, you know, next week, obviously, there's going to be some developer information around Windows Phone 7. And, you know, there'll be some other information over time as well. And I think that the way they've gone about doing things with this product is really exciting. You know, and again, it's the type of excitement I very rarely feel, you know, with regards to technology, especially from Microsoft. And I hate to say it that way, but I mean, they've become somewhat complacent in other areas, and it's nice to, you know, be excited by something.
Yeah.
Again,
so. It's great that, the, you know,
yeah,
there's something exciting going on. Absolutely. I agree with you 100%.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm yeah, you know, and
it's kind of a surprise, frankly. Who knew?
I know
that they
know.
Could make a phone.
Well, one of the things they said that you know, we talked about today was that obviously at one point there was a Windows Mobile 7 they were working on, you know, codenamed Photon, that was very much an evolution of what came before, and it's a hard decision for a company, especially Microsoft size, and you know, given the history there and so forth, for them to say, you know, we're not doing this.
Right.
Even though there were some good ideas there, and you know, we need to go in a completely different direction.
Wow, I mean, that's a huge thing.
Yeah, yeah, that doesn't happen very often.
Where do you think the directive to do that came from? Do you think it came from Ballmer? From
no, I don't think it came from Ballmer, but I think ultimately he had to okay that, right? I don't think so. I mean, I can't say right now where I think I can't really say. So, but I think that, you know, it requires the right people in the right places to make the right decisions at the right times and all that kind of stuff. And it doesn't happen that often. Right. I mean, there are some semi-obvious things. I mean, you can look at products that are very successful like Windows 7, but it's very easy to pick out little issues here and there. You know, for example, in the wake of Windows Live, why doesn't Windows 7 have these deep integration pieces with the Windows Live services? Like, for example, why isn't there a way to access Windows Live SkyDrive directly from Windows Explorer in Windows 7? That should have been part of that product. Like, why wasn't it? You know, obviously there's some political stuff involved there. You know, to make the right decision requires everyone, you know, or a group of people to all do the right thing at the right time. So I think Windows Phone is benefiting from the right people being in the right place at the right time.
Right. Good. Very, very exciting.
Yeah, really interesting. So we'll see. You know, if I'm still as excited in a week, but I keep waiting for the disappointment to set in, you know.
Well, you've been burned so many times, Paul, let's be honest.
I was sure that smart displays were going to be it. Nope. I was never sure.
No. Who knew?
I think we all knew.
Windows 7 Service Pack 1, they're pushing this up a little bit. It seems like they're,
well, that's not what I've read.
They're not?
And that's the story. No, okay. And I can't stand reading stories like this. You know, you and I talked about this in the podcast months ago, literally months ago.
So they're not rushing it.
No, this is exactly the schedule. The schedule was always 1 year, well, what they call general availability, GA plus 1 year. That was Service Pack 1. You know, there was a story this week saying that Microsoft had originally thought they were going to push this out a couple of years, and now they've scaled it back, and they're going to do it within, oh my God, 1 year of the release of Windows 7.
Yeah, why, that's almost always, exactly 1 year.
We've talked about this already. That's been the plan from day one. You know, there isn't a lot of detail about what's going on with Windows 7 Service Pack 1. My understanding is that it's mostly going to be an aggregation of bug fixes and so forth. You know, there's been some talk about, as Microsoft often does in service packs, adding support for new technologies, things like USB 3 or whatever. And I think we can expect that kind of stuff. Service Pack 1 is going to be a bigger deal on the server end. Not that that's a big deal for most of the people listening to this. But as far as the client goes, Windows 7, I don't think it's going to be a dramatic change. Not like, for example, Windows Vista Service Pack 1 made a big difference from a performance perspective and also from a compatibility perspective. And then if you look back to Windows XP with Service Pack 2, which was essentially a brand new operating system in many ways.
Right, that was huge, yeah.
That was obviously a big deal. I don't think it's going to be like that.
Okay. It's just a roll-up, what they are traditionally.
That's my understanding, yeah.
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 We got more. We're talking with Paul Theriot. He's the Windows expert, Windows Weekly. It's a little different. It's kind of a West Coast, a Left Coast edition.
That's right. That's right. I'm lit from the other side.
Yeah, he is, actually. Light is on the left half of his face. But before we go on too much farther, I do want to mention our friends at Citrix. You know, maybe you could have had this meeting instead of flying all the way out to Redmond. You could have had a GoToMeeting. I guess Microsoft's not going to use GoToMeeting. And funny thing is, Microsoft does use Citrix products. In fact, Citrix, they licensed it for their remote desktop product. And Citrix does kind of the enterprise remote access stuff. GoToMeeting, like GoToMyPC and GoToAssist, are kind of consumer products that make it easy to use remote access for specific purposes. In the case of GoToMeeting, to turn that boring conference call into something, you know, visual, something compelling, something interesting, whether it's a sales presentation, a product a demonstration, a collaboration, training, GoToMeeting is amazing. You can try it free right now. I'm going to give you 30 days of free GoToMeeting. All you have to do is go to GoToMeeting.com. What are you laughing at?
I'm sorry. I'm looking at this iPad thing again.
Oh, go.
This is awesome.
It is a good mock-up. I especially like the circa 2002.
This is an actual HP tablet PC from
2002. Yeah, I remember that one. Yeah, I have actually. It's little brother down the road.
This is such a great form factor. They should bring us back. I didn't mean to interrupt the ad. I just...
he's looking at it, giggling. I bet you want to go to a Starbucks, don't you?
Suck it, Trebek.
GoToMeeting.com/WindowsWeekly. Try it free for 30 days. You will love it. Or my name's not Alex Trebek. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we continue on with a saga of wonderful things coming from Microsoft, including a silly cross-platform gaming move.
Well, I would... Yeah, okay.
Hey, you wrote it, not me, dude.
I did. You're right.
What are you talking
about? Leo, I don't know why you have to mischaracterize what I wrote. Oh, you read exactly what I wrote.
I characterized it precisely. So what are you talking about?
Oh, I see. I wrote
that. Yeah, you wrote that. Well, you know, there's a lot of gaming news this week. We just talked about it a little bit with This Week in Computer Hardware. Steam is going cross-platform.
So and I wouldn't mind talking about that a little bit. I don't quite understand what the point of that is.
Well, they must feel that the Mac market is big enough to make it worthwhile. I mean, that's a lot of work that they're going to put into it.
So I have this theory that, you know, the biggest gaming markets there are actually already locked up by other companies, right?
Ah.
iPhone locked up by Apple.
Right.
Xbox locked up by Microsoft, you know, as far as the online service. You know, there's not going to be another online service for the Xbox, obviously, right? You know, each of the dedicated gaming platforms, you know, portable gaming platforms, basically locked up by those makers. You know, this is an interesting, they're putting their kind of stake in the ground here, aren't they? I mean, you know, Steam, in the discussions we had about whether PC gaming was dead or not, you know, Steam is obviously the biggest deal on the PC side as far as an Xbox Live type service, right? Very well done. Nice selection of games and all that. You know, going to the Mac is a big move that might not have a big payoff because, you know, you have to port not just your games, right? And obviously they can't port all of their games, but they'll port, it looks like they're porting some of their newer games and some good games, I should say, to the Mac, which is fantastic for Mac users. But they also have this notion of an online service, you know, this thing that's sort of like Xbox Live. You know, importing that to the Mac, there's going to be a lot of work there, you know? And then supporting the third parties that are going to want to make games that also access those back-end services.
Right.
It's a big commitment. And it reminds me of, you know, I don't know if we ever talked about this in the podcast, but Apple's somewhat curious move of doing this iWork stuff on the iPad, which I find to be a lot of work for a very little payoff, you know, is how I view it. And I'm curious why these companies would stretch themselves so thin. But I have to think that.
But isn't Microsoft doing the same thing? They're doing dedicated stuff for Courier.
Dedicated stuff for Courier?
Yeah.
Who knows?
They said they're a number. Well, who knows? I guess you're right. Who knows? Microsoft isn't saying anything.
I don't recall Microsoft ever saying that, Leo. I don't know. Who knows?
Okay. That's a good point.
I don't mean to get off on a rant here or a side tangent, but I find that to be kind of a curious thing for Valve, you know, not necessarily an enormous company. And this is something that's going to be requiring enormous resources. And by the way, I would just point out, this is a company that can't for the life of it deliver the third episode of Half-Life, you know,
right.
I mean, these guys can't do anything on a timely basis. So, I mean, I'm a little concerned here, you know. By the time these guys ever do deliver this thing, you know, this game engine that these games run on will be over a decade old. I mean, they're really kind of taking their time on some other stuff. So anyway, it's just kind of a curious thing.
So what is this cross? Now, getting back to Microsoft, this cross-platform gaming? I don't know what this
is. I believe that this has been misreported now that I've spoken to Microsoft today.
Tell me, I didn't read the story.
Yeah, so what this is. So at the very high-profile TechEd Middle East 2010.
I really wanted to go there this year.
Yeah, we all did. But fortunately, it was covered on the front page of the New York Times every day, much like everything Apple does is. So everyone knows about it.
You're not bitter.
Well, I mean, it's an interesting venue for many things. But for them to do this kind of a demo at TechEd Middle East 2010, I mean, it doesn't make any sense. But anyway, what they showed off was that it is possible, and I think this is the important distinction to make here, it is possible using these modern API sets that they've made, that Microsoft has made for video game makers, to create a single game. Well, it's not actually a single game. You create a game, actually three different versions of the game. One that runs on Windows, one that runs on the Windows Phone, and then one that runs on the Xbox 360. And you can support the notion of continuing a game session from one system. That's interesting. You know, and when you think about that, if you really think about what's going on there, this is not really a brand new capability necessarily. I mean, in the same way that you could, say, read a Kindle ebook on a Kindle and then pick up your iPhone and continue along at the same point that you left off, you know, doing this with video games on different systems is technically feasible, right? There's not necessarily a huge market for this, but you could see that it would be possible. A much bigger initiative was undertaken a few years ago when Microsoft announced that they had created a game where you could play on the PC against people who were playing on the Xbox 360. That game was terrible, right? Shadowrun. And no other attempt was made to make other games like that. So that was a much bigger initiative that went absolutely nowhere. I think the reality check here for this cross-platform gaming demo is that this is never really going to happen, right? I mean, it is technically...
Is this like XNA? What is the...
It is literally XNA, yeah. Okay. So Microsoft, just so for people don't understand, you know, Microsoft has evolved their programming APIs over the years. So they have the notion of what they call managed code, which is the .NET libraries, which started out as a very small subset of what was available in the wider Win32 APIs, so-called non-managed code. Now, .NET has gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. It's still not exactly comparable to everything that's possible on the Win32 side, but it's, you know, much bigger than it was. But then they started working on this thing called Silverlight. And Silverlight is a sort of a subset of the .NET APIs. And again, that started as a web API, right? In the beginning, it was for video delivery. It's now turned into more of a programmatic thing. So Silverlight is actually going to be the API that Microsoft and its developer and third-party developers will use to create applications that run a Windows Phone. XNA is a .NET-based API for game makers, right? And if you make a game for Windows Phone, for example, you can use XNA. And I believe that XNA is used, well, it is used for, smaller games for the Xbox 360, and it's also possible to create XNA games that run on Windows. And that's where this comes about, you know. But the important thing is this is not really the same game, right? It's not literally the same executable.
It's not?
Well, no, these are three completely different systems, right? You know, the Xbox 360 is a PowerPC system. The computers are x86. Right. And Windows Phone is, what is Windows Phone? Windows Phone is something completely different. What is it? What do you call it? The Snapdragon.
Right.
These are completely different hardware platforms. So,
but isn't XNA like a high-level language that you write
to? Yeah, so I think the point here, though, is what you're really doing is you're creating a game. You probably have to make three versions of it that are somewhat different because of the different requirements.
Mostly
the
for resolution, yeah.
All kinds of different things, whatever. Yeah. But there must be APIs for handling game state, and that's what they're really doing. You know, in other words, you've logged into your Windows Live ID, and you can access that stuff from the development environment. You play a game to a certain point. You quit the game, and then you start up the version of the game on the phone, let's say. And it says, you know, do you want to continue from where you were last? And you say yes. So, yeah, I mean, it's fine. It's a cute notion. But, I mean, I guess what I'm trying to say is, you know, I think a little too much was made about what this was. And I don't think this is the big deal of the future, not really. You know, I think the bigger deal of the future is that Microsoft is creating a comparable game development platform for all of its major hardware or software OS platforms, you know, Windows Phone, Windows, Xbox 360. So if you develop skills in creating a game that can run on one of those platforms, it should be very easy to port it to one of the other platforms and thus, grow the potential market for your product. That's exciting. But I mean, that's what that really is, right? And I think the point of it is to show, look, this is technically possible. See? What we did works, you know. Right. I think that's what it really is. I don't think what's going to really happen is you're going to go buy a game that comes with three different executables and you're actually going to do it on all these different systems. I'm not saying it won't happen. I'm just saying I don't think that's going to be the norm, and I don't think that's really the point of this.
XNA is really middleware.
Middleware is it's kind of a sore spot in the Microsoft world. Because of some antitrust stuff. I don't know if I would use that term.
They don't like that word.
It's not, I don't know. Middleware.
Oh, I'm sorry. According to Microsoft, it's a industry-leading software services resources communities focusing on enabling game developers to...
Yes. Yeah. What you just said is exactly what it is.
To be successful on Microsoft gaming platforms.
Yeah. It's that.
I want that.
That sounds good.
So I was thinking, I always thought it was more like a Flash or something, where it was a higher level language that you could write.
By the way, that is sort of how it started, right? Remember the jokes when Silverlight first came out?
Yeah.
I couldn't understand why they were doing this. It reminded me of that XPS PDF replacement they put in Windows Vista. You know what?
Nobody uses it.
Why are you making a thing that is good as the thing we already have? I don't know. What is that?
Yeah.
And Silverlight sort of started like that, but you know, they really revved it very quickly, and it quickly became a complete, you know, operating environment.
Right.
And I think it's very interesting. You know, there's a fourth platform here that no one is discussing, but is a possibility for the future as well, which is Silverlight games that run in a browser. And speaking of gaming platforms that actually make a lot more sense than, you know, even the PC maybe or the Mac. You only have to spend 10 seconds on Facebook to understand the appeal of web-based games. So
Farmville,
and the popularity of these games.
Oh, huge. So this isn't Windows Presentation Foundation.
No, but, you know, it's based on the same, I hate to say back end, but sort of same back end.
Same idea.
Yeah. Okay. And the programming model is the same. You know, it's the same type of API. Okay. A managed code API.
So, you know, it's good they announced this.
And it's great that they chose such a high profile and gaming oriented.
Oh, well.
Show to do
the Middle East is game central.
Well, TechEd is the IT professional show too. That's the important thing to understand. So
right. Oh, so TechEd was in the Middle East.
Well, they have different versions.
It was the Middle Eastern TechEd.
There's one in India. There's you know, they're everywhere. They're all over the place.
Yeah. You know, I just got my beta to. I'm sorry, I'm not paying attention. I just got my beta to StarCraft 2, and I want to play now. I want to play.
You can play. I'll take the reins. Just let me know.
No, it's okay. So excited. Are you Diablo 2, StarCraft kind of guy? You're not a top down, click a lot kind of a guy.
I have tried to play Diablo and, you know, Diablo 2, and with the understanding that this is really popular, I'm supposed to like it. What's wrong with me? And I just can't get excited about it.
Hmm. Oh, so there is something wrong with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought there was.
No, it's got to be me.
It's got to be me.
Genetic defect.
Yes, it's got to be me. Microsoft cancels Windows Essential Business Server.
Right.
Wow, I'm just going to let you take the lead on this because I'm just so upset.
I'm going to turn this one on its head and make you interested in it.
Oh, that'll be a shift.
Just so we understand what Essential Business Server is.
It's essential, this much I know.
It turns out it was not so essential.
Yeah. Microsoft, you can't cancel something called Essential, so maybe you shouldn't use that word anymore.
Yeah, Small Business Server, right? And Small Business Server is a way to, get very small companies with no technical expertise.
That's me.
Into Microsoft server products cheaply and easily, right? So it involves, you know, a version of Exchange and, you know, security products, a database and the high-end version and so forth. And it's evolved over the years, but it started as you would install all this stuff on one server, which is anyone who runs servers will tell you is absolutely the wrong way to do things. But, you know, whatever, that was SPS for a long time. And then, of course, on the high end for enterprises and for medium to large businesses, you know, Microsoft has its standalone server products, you know, Windows Server, Exchange, SQL Server, et cetera. But there's a market between those two markets, you know, the mid-market. And EBS was an attempt to create a multi-server version of Small Business Server that would be appropriate for the mid-market, you know, really complex, just and hard to test. I mean, before Windows Server 2008 came out, which was Longhorn Server, you know, we would get these beta versions of this thing. It came on multiple disks. It required, 20 steps over 8 hours through this integrated setup routine. It was just terrible. It was terrible to install it. It was hard because you needed 3 x64 servers, right, to test it, or a virtual environment that somehow could run x64 on the client, which is common now, but wasn't common 3-4 years ago at all. Very, very difficult. Anyway, I think they sold about 3 of these things, so they canceled it. But what's interesting about this is when you look at the language they use to describe them canceling it, it cuts to the heart of a complaint I made about the most recent version of Small Business Server, which is this. You know, in a day and age when all of these, when small businesses have no business at all hosting their own email, for example, in-house, on-premises, on their own hardware, right? Microsoft does not offer this product where you can, you know, have local storage, maybe a database with line of business applications, whatever. But your email and maybe some other servers are hosted by Microsoft, you know, out in the cloud where they should be. They don't have that product. But when they talked about the cancellation of EBS, they were saying, you know, increasingly mid-sized businesses are turning to virtualization and cloud computing as a way to cut costs, you know, improve efficiency and so forth. That's exactly right. And it's exactly what I was complaining about with Small Business Server as well. So I think that I think what this really is saying is Microsoft's customers are already clamoring for a cloud version of this. We don't want this stuff in-house. You know, it's too complex. And don't be surprised to see with the next version of Small Business Server that they don't do something similar, not canceling it, but rather having a version of it where some of those essential server products are actually hosted instead of on-premises. Mm-hmm. That's something that I think would make a lot of sense
mm-hmm.
for small businesses.
Mm-hmm.
So really, Leo, what this is...
What is this?
It's not a server story so much as it is a cloud computing story.
Of course. See, now I like it.
See?
Now I'm excited. You did make it interesting, Paul Theriot. You did. And then...
Jeez.
And then you mentioned the Office 2010 Tech Guarantee.
So we mentioned this last week, but I wanted to follow up. It's funny. I actually got a handful of emails that were all identical, which basically said, so I understand that if I buy Office 2007 now, I can get Office 2010 for free. That's fantastic. But I want to do it through that Ultimate Steel deal, right? Remember
right.
this thing where
yeah,
you get it really
yeah,
cheaply?
Yeah,
now I'm thinking to myself, I hear this, and to me,
you think cheapskate. First thing you think.
They're cheap.
Cheapskate.
Yeah. I mean, like, how cheap could you be?
Come on.
You're getting the thing for almost nothing, and now you want the next one for free, too, really? You know? And so my initial response to a couple of people was, I don't actually know, but I can't imagine that they would be giving this thing away for free on the Ultimate Steel, except that they are. So apparently, if you go to this Ultimate Steel website and look at the, you know, the FAQ or whatever, it actually says people who buy the Ultimate, you know, buy this through the Ultimate Steel can get Office 2010 for free, too.
Wow.
So there you go.
God bless you, Microsoft. God
sure.
bless you, everyone.
Because sometimes the only way you can get rid of it is to give it away.
My new little netbook /
yeah.
notebook
yep.
came with Office 2007 trial edition, which I immediately erased. But it also
yes.
came with Microsoft Works.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, you know they don't make that anymore.
It was kind of a blast from the past. I thought.
Yeah.
Hello, my old friend.
Was there an AOL thing in there too?
No, this is brand new from Asus.
How would you like to get online?
Brand new. This just came out, and they still have Works on it.
That's just sad.
So I should get rid of it.
Yeah.
yeah.
yeah. Yeah. In fact, that's going to be my tip of the week.
You know what? I did like it. Came with all the live stuff installed. So I don't have to.
Because
I always go .live.com or get.live.com and get all the stuff. And it was already on it, which was good.
I the Lenovo laptops I've gotten in recently have had that stuff pre-installed. And I think that's nice. You know, and that's the way it should be. Because and if you think back months and months ago, we were talking, you know, to the average consumer, that's the right way to experience Windows
yes.
7, and it's when you don't have to think about it, it's even better.
You know, it's really funny, though. I didn't get the browser ballot. I was really looking forward to that.
Yeah. I had someone say, I didn't use it this week, but someone sent me in a tip where he explained step-by-step how you can remove the browser ballot from your system, you know, using Windows Update. I thought that was pretty fun.
Is it really? You can? You can actually...
Well, yeah, it's an update, you know, so you can actually just hide it and choose not to install it. You don't have to accept the update, so
how funny.
You don't ever have to see it if you don't want it. I'd like to see it. You know, I'd like to just experience.
Well, I think Christmasina, I've seen pictures of it anyway, and it's a lot of stuff, of course. Now, you did hear the latest. This is going to make
Yeah, this is beautiful.
10.5 Opera?
no, that one I didn't hear. What
brand new Opera? Major
yeah.
flaw.
Yeah.
Major security, serious security flaw, and the advice everybody's saying is just don't use it.
Oh, that's been my advice about Opera forever.
So,
but
you know, they really, you know, they should mention that on the ballot.
Sure. Actually, there should be a little bar chart with the number of unpatched vulnerabilities from the past 6 months, you know, to help you choose which one's the right
yeah.
choice.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. So they've redesigned the ballot.
Well, right. So it actually looks the same. But apparently when it came out, there was an engineer at IBM who examined it and said, you know, the random generator that determines the
it's
order.
It's not truly random.
Browsers appear as not random. And it was causing, I think, Opera and maybe Google Chrome to appear more frequently. And perhaps ironically, it was causing IE to always appear last.
You know? I mean, Microsoft. Come on.
Listen, this is like, if it was possible to kick yourself between the legs, that's what Microsoft does.
Come on. Right?
So the thing I don't understand about the browser ballot is it only appears when IE is your default browser.
Which is crazy.
Which is kind of a dubious thing, I think. I mean, I don't quite understand that. But anyway, one would think that random number generators are pretty well known by this point among the computer scientists in the crowd. Although, you know, we must have talked about this at some point in this podcast, the notion of, and I see this all the time in my car. I have an iPod in my car,
mm-hmm.
and you play songs. And I swear to God, this thing's not random. I don't care what you say. It's not random.
They swear it is, but I know what you're saying.
To the tune of, here's something that literally just happened to me the other day. I get in the car. I switch over to the iPod. It was on some playlist. I wanted to get it off of that. So I switched it to just all music. And then you hit play. And you can't turn it to shuffle until it starts playing. So the first song that always plays, always, is the first song by the first artist, you know, with the letter A. You know, that's how it works, right? So for some reason, I have it in my head. I'm thinking, like, what could this song be? You know, in other words, before I hit shuffle, I'm going to hear this song. I'm going to hear it start. And I'm going to hit shuffle, and then it's going to go away.
Right.
And I hum the beginning of this AC/DC song because I'm thinking this is what it's going to be. And a different AC/DC song plays. And the song that I was humming myself is actually kind of an obscure song. So anyway, hit shuffle. I don't like the next song. Next, next. And then the song that I was humming in my head came on next.
Whoa.
Like five songs in. Now, this iPod has
to have... That's just a coinky-dink.
Like, come on, 16,000 songs. Of course, it's a coincidence. But I mean, still, it's just sort of astonishing. I mean, the other thing that happens is, you know, if I'm driving to the gym or something and I click on, you know, next and it's like a Beatles song will come on, for example, I'll hear three Beatles songs before I get to the gym.
They do have a setting, which is kind of a funny setting.
Right.
That separates artists better.
More random.
More random. It is more or less random.
I've always felt that this random thing was dubious, you know.
More random. That's a good setting.
Yeah.
It's like being more pregnant.
Yes. Anywho.
Anywho.
Clearly the people behind the iPod were responsible for the
random. God, yeah. That's horrible.
So, you know, knowing Microsoft, they're probably screwed it up this time, too. So, like, you know, Maxthon and Sleipnir will come jump to the top of the list.
I feel sorry for Europeans for so many reasons. They got old houses.
Sure.
You know, they don't pasteurize their milk. The women don't shave under their arms. It's just there's so many reasons that I feel sorry for Europe.
Wow.
I'm never getting to go there again, am I?
I was going to say.
That's it. That's the last time. My password is now marked. No, actually, I'm going to Paris for Le Web in December. I'm very excited.
Nice.
Yeah. I hear it's warm and beautiful in Paris in December.
It's not.
No?
But it is beautiful, actually.
In the words of Humphrey Bogart, I was misinformed. So Ryan Schrant and I on Twitch were talking a little bit about this new OnLive service. They've announced pricing and availability, and I'm kind of stunned.
By how cheap it is?
No, that they charge you for $15 a month for nothing.
For nothing, yeah.
You don't even get a game.
Yes, just the beauty of saying that you have the service.
$15 a month, and you don't even get a game.
Yeah.
That's kind of odd.
I know.
Yeah.
I think this will change over time.
It will?
I would have to. No, I mean, I think it will. That's not sustainable.
Yeah.
$15 a month.
Nobody's going to pay for it. You want a game if you pay that much. You should get. They could give you a crappy game. Left 4 Dead 1.
Yeah.
Something.
I think what's going to happen is a lot of people are going to try it out right away.
Oh, okay.
And then how it fares after that is going to depend on how good it is. Because if this thing doesn't deliver right away.
Right.
No one's going to care.
We should say what this is. It's a service that you can play high-end video games on low-end hardware, even a netbook, or they're going to offer it like a device that's like a nothing. Yeah,
it's like a deck of cards.
Like a deck of cards. And because all the work is done on the server side, it's basically these are streaming video devices.
It's a cloud computing video game service.
Right. And it's the guy who started Web TV, Steve Perlman.
Steve Perlman, yeah. So I'm intrigued by this, right?
I mean, he has a great pedigree.
Yep. And if there's anyone who understands the latency issues and all that stuff, it'd be this guy. But I think it's worth pointing out that no one I've spoken to about this who's intelligent and understands issues about networking has not questioned it.
It seems hard to believe.
Yeah. I mean, so I want to believe, and I hope it succeeds, you know. There is a very nice element of getting rid of the hardware rat race that occurs in both video game consoles and in video games of any kinds, you know, where, you know, you always need the next platform, you know, the next hardware, the next graphics card, you know, whatever it is to get the best experience. And obviously with a system like this, the upgrades occur on the server. So for all the reasons that cloud computing is valid for other things, you know, it makes it valid for video gaming, assuming it's true and it works. You know, I'm excited by the possibility and I'm definitely going to try it. But it's hard not to be a little skeptical about it.
Yeah. Well, you know, Ryan played with it a little bit and found some latency, but then they got mad at him that he reported that.
Sure. Now he's out.
Now he's out. He doesn't get invited anymore to their parties.
I understand.
He's not allowed to play in any reindeer games anymore. But he was not on their, you know, he was out of their service area kind of thing. So I guess I understand.
Isn't their service area the United States of America? I don't understand.
I don't.
Well, if you go and you can sign up. So if you
it's free, right when you first sign up.
For the first 25,000 people who are accepted. Now, you have, it's not the first 25,000 people who sign up, right?
Huh?
They ask you some questions about your bandwidth and so forth and who your provider is. So if you're on Verizon Fios or whatever, you're probably going to get in. And obviously, they're looking for people with high bandwidth connections.
Right. They want to look good.
That's okay. I mean, honestly, this is a forward-looking thing and... you know, those kinds of connections are becoming increasingly more, you know, widespread. I want to say that the one we have at home right now is probably 25 down, and it's something surprising up. It's, I think it's as high as 18 up. It's pretty high. Usually the other direction is much, much slower. But, you know, 50 megabit connections are here.
You have Fios. You have Fios at home.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
It's good. It should be good enough for this kind of thing.
So will you apply? You apply. This is
I did. I already did.
Okay. Yeah. I'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah. Definitely going to try it.
Definitely.
Hey, you know, I made my... this is going to sound silly. You know, we use Skype every week, obviously, to record the show.
And you look fabulous.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
And, you know, I primp.
I could tell you're primped.
I actually used Skype today to make a phone call. And I want to say... it was for the first time ever in my entire life that I actually used it for this purpose. I had to make a work call and it needed a landline, and my friend here does not have a landline, so I use Skype. But actually, you know, when you have a high speed connection, and I'm by the way, I used I think 30 cents worth of credit.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah, I was on the phone for a couple hours. You know, wow. It's pretty impressive.
Wow.
You know?
Oh, I love it. But you're right. You need the bandwidth, and it's the upstream that's very important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it worked great.
Yeah, it's really cool.
So, if we can make we can do video like this, you know, why can't we play Call of Duty?
Have you seen the latency on this video? Because when you shoot me 3 seconds later, I will go, ow.
Yeah.
Ow. So I'm playing with my new Windows 7 laptop. I mentioned that at the beginning of the game show and several
times. Did you remove Works yet?
No, I'm going to leave it. What the hell?
You're going to leave it? It's like, you know, we discovered some cancer in your liver. Do you want us to remove it?
Oh, really?
It
is that bad? I should get rid of it. All right, I'll get rid of it. I'll take it out.
Yeah, what harm could it?
What should I replace it with? Office?
Yes.
It's expensive.
I have 2010 beta. Put it on right now.
Oh, yeah. I guess I could put that on. But then in a year, I'll have to buy something. All right. 2010 beta.
You know,
should I get the run... The new thing that they do, the run it and then gun it.
What kind of what are we talking about on this machine? What do we have for
slow? It's an Atom, a dual Atom.
I get to download the real
download thing. It. Have a real thing in there.
Yeah.
Okay. See, you're my guru. But one of the things that it does do, because it has the Ion GPU acceleration on it, is I've got my little AeroPeak. I love my AeroPeak.
Actually, in Office 2010, we'll take advantage of that GPU for its various PowerPoint type effects and so forth.
So let's talk a little bit about this. Is your Windows 7 tip?
Feature.
Feature. Not a tip. It's a feature.
I realize there's a very hazy and vague line that separates a tip from a feature, but...
Oh, well, doesn't really matter to me. I see what you're saying when you say feature. And seriously, I'm showing it on camera. There's the...
Oh, you
that's
are.
What you're talking about. Like a Windows 7 Aero Peak. Is that it?
Yeah, so that's part of it.
There's more? Oh, do tell, Paul Theroux. Do tell.
Jeez. Wow. Well, thank you for this setup, Leo. This is.
Well, I mean, I hover over the icon on the taskbar. I see a little thumbnail.
It does things. Listen, I am I am going to wrap this into a tip as well, because the tip is related. Is it a tip or a fee? Actually, maybe it's a software pick. These things are also confusing to me.
If you're confused, you can only imagine.
I know. Well, allow me to clear the confusion.
Please.
So, you know, obviously in Windows Vista, Microsoft added Arrow Glass for the first time. But Windows Vista didn't really do much with the glass. You know, so in Windows 7, they've increased the amount of glass that's in the system. You know, the taskbar is good glass. And they've also increased the ways in which they use it in various animations and so forth. So, you know, previous versions of Windows had something called Show Desktop, which is a way you could click a button that was in the Quick Launch toolbar, and it would minimize everything immediately so you could see the desktop. You could click it again to put everything back, but, you know, you could also move around and just, you know, open other windows or close other windows from there. You didn't have to toggle it. But
right. They've
replaced that in Windows 7 with something called a Preview Desktop button, which is down in the right corner, the lower right corner of the taskbar. It's that little glass rectangle. And the thing that's cool about that is you could click it, but actually all you really need to do is mouse over it. And it gives you this kind of cool effect, especially if you have lots of open windows, where you can see the outlines of the windows that were open, but you can now see through them to the desktop. And the reason that's important is you may have some icons on the desktop that not that looking at them is very valuable, but if you're using Windows gadgets, which do appear on your desktop in Windows 7, that allows you to glance at those things, and then you can move the mouse off of that little panel and get back to work. So that's kind of cool. And it does work like the old Show Desktop in the sense that you can, in fact, click it, and that will literally minimize everything. And then you can click it again, and that will...
That's cool. Look at that.
That will bring everything back. So
that's cool.
That's a nice use, I think, of the glass effect. There's also the window previews, which are part of AeroPeak, and these are as you mouse over the taskbar buttons, and that's what you were showing, right?
Yeah.
So those are very cool as well. And there's also a full screen window preview. So if you then mouse over one of those little mini previews, that will preview the window as it is in its full size. And this brings us to one of the great comedic parts of Windows 7, something that every Windows 7 user will experience at least once when they use this new operating system.
Clicking.
Well, right, which is you mouse over one of the buttons,
right,
and it brings up a little taskbar preview. You mouse over that, and it brings up the window, and you think, oh, yeah, that's the thing I want.
And then
you
click it.
Move your mouse off, and it's gone. And it's like the touching the fire thing.
It's gone.
You only have to do it once because you'll be so irritated by it that you won't make that mistake again.
But it's gone.
You actually have to click the preview, the taskbar.
Click that. And then that window, it's there.
Okay. Yes, to come to the front.
Oh, wow.
So everything you wanted to know about AeroPeak is obviously available on my website. So please do visit.
And that was our Windows 7 feature of the week. And now, the tip of the week.
Let's see, what do I have this
F11.
Week? Oh, the Windows 7 tip. This is the simplest Windows 7 tip ever, but I really think this is cool. You know, people who are into keyboard shortcuts will know that for a long time.
This works in everything.
Yeah, it actually works in everything. So, it's neat. And you know... I've found myself using this, especially when you have, it works in Windows Explorer. So, for example, if you have a window with lots of mixed content, with lots of nice icon previews, you've got maybe large icons on and so forth. If you want to just get rid of all the junk around the window, you can just hit F11, and that actually blasts that window up to full screen without a lot of the chrome stuff around the edges.
So nice. Look at that.
Yeah,
it's the kiosk mode.
Yeah, it's a neat little effect. Yeah,
and that works for every program.
Well, it doesn't work for every single application, but
it works
does.
In Chrome. Which
yeah,
it
works
good.
For it's yeah, yeah.
It does something different, unfortunately, in Evernote. That's too bad.
Yeah, if you were to let me see, I have to.
Does it in Explorer? Let's see if it does it in Picasa. Yeah, does it in Picasa? See, Google understands it. Google does it right. Let's see if Firefox, Mozilla.
Let's see,
Mozilla doesn't do it. Nope.
No, Mozilla.
So it is a guideline, but not a law.
Right.
Too bad.
Right.
F11, a good key to try.
Simplest
anyway.
Thing ever, but
love F11. It. Loves it.
Thank you, I should say, to Hernan Heyman for the tip.
Thank you, Hernan.
I'm going to be sending Hernan a book. Actually, and for the people who have won books for tips,
yeah.
My wife is sending out a bunch of books this week. I actually held on to some for a while because I've been hoping to get Raphael up because it'd be neat for him to sign a bunch of them as well.
That's a good idea. You're co-author, yeah.
Yeah, we haven't had the chance to get together, so I've just signed a bunch of books, and my wife is sending them out this week. So if you have been waiting for a book, they really are on the way. I don't just say they're on the way. They will be coming.
Speaking of books, you know, Paul and I read, of course. We have to in our business. We use our eyes a lot, but there are times when I'm on the plane or in the garden or on the gym treadmill there or maybe driving the car that I can't hold a book, and that's where I get really excited.
Oh, no. Oh, right. Okay.
About Audible. What?
I can't use the Audible pick I have.
Due to publishing restrictions, we are not authorized to sell this item in the country where you live.
Allow me to explain the
Wait
pick.
A minute. That's not right.
I know. Isn't that strange? So hold on. Let me...
You can get it in Spanish.
No. This can't
Seriously.
Right.
Blink.
Here we go. I have the wrong link. That's why.
We'll fix that link.
Okay. Sorry about that. I knew that. Okay. Well, let me explain the pick this week. Oh, he is the author of The Tipping Point.
I thought. He wrote Outliers. The
okay,
Tipping Point.
So,
he is. I love Malcolm Gladwell.
So does my friend Joe. So when I come out to Seattle, I stay with Joe and his wife Rachel. And Joe is possibly the biggest consumer of Audible books that I've ever
really?
Met in my life.
Oh,
it's astonishing. Neat. Yeah. And you know, I said to him, I said, "God, you read so many Audible books. I mean, you know, why don't you recommend something?" And he rattled off a list of about 30. I mean, it was almost hilarious. And so finally I said, he mentioned Blink. He basically said anything by Malcolm Gladwell.
Yes.
I said, whoa. I said, you know what? I don't think we ever recommended anything by Malcolm.
No, and he always does his own books, and he has this great enthusiasm in the way he reads it.
And he reads his own books, yeah.
Yeah.
So this is maybe, I don't know if it's the best one, but this is absolutely.
This is a good one. Tipping Point was the first.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. See, it's funny. I would have recommended Tipping Point. I thought that was someone else for some reason.
You know, all three of them. Outliers, Tipping Point, and Blink. You should read all three.
Yeah.
We can get you the first one free. His new one is What the Dog Saw. So he's got four books on here. If you want to get a book for free, and it could be any of those four, go to audible.com/windows and sign up for the gold account. That's a book a month. And Paul and we are consuming a little more than a book a month, so we're on the Platinum plan. If you join the Platinum plan, you can get both of those books. But go to audible.com/windows. Sign up today. You get to keep the book. You can cancel at any time, so there's no cost to you if you decide to abandon ship. But believe me, and some people do. Some people don't want a subscription. They don't like the pressure of having to buy. You know, and your credits accumulate. I mean, it's not like you have to buy one every month. But
yeah, and by the way, that's actually an important point because it's not like with the Zune Pass, for example, you get 10 credits a month. If you don't spend those that month, they go away.
Right. This is use it or lose it.
Yeah, these things will rack up.
Yeah.
And I guess there are savings to be had by being a member, so the price of the book is cheaper if you are a member.
It is. That's why I do the subscription thing.
Yeah.
Because I just read so much. I'm 300 books in on Audible.com. I just love them, and I know you will, too. Get your first book free and see what you think. Audible.com/windows. Paul's recommending, and I agree with him, Blink, The Power of Thinking Without Thinking, one of several great books by Mr. Malcolm Gladwell, narrated by the author. Audible.com/windows. We thank you so much for your support, Audible. And for all those great books that have saved me, every time I go on a trip, I'm sure you do the same thing. I stock up and I'm getting ready for Austin. I've got about 8 books I'm ready to read. I'm so excited. I love it. All right. Now we're going to move along to our next topic of the day. And I think we're ready now for our tip of the week. This is not necessarily, but not exclusive thereof, of a Windows 7 tip, but it could be a tip of any kind.
It's just a tip.
It's a
non-Windows 7 tip.
It's a tip that you could use really on Macintosh if you so were inclined.
If anyone ever used such a system.
Not me. What do you think?
I use Chrome.
I do too. I love Chrome. First thing I did, in fact, was the first program I installed in this new notebook.
Yeah. One of the things, there's so many things to like about Chrome, but especially since they've added extensions, it's become really powerful. I like the minimalist UI. One of the things I don't like, and I don't like this in any browser, Firefox, Safari, and Chrome all have this notion of like a bookmark bar, I don't like that it takes up space. I don't like it there. I always get rid of it. But, obviously the notion of bookmarks is kind of nice. But Google doesn't have a menu, so you really don't have an easy way to access those bookmarks any other way. But Turns out you can change the shortcut in Chrome's properties, right, for the browser when you run it. And you just add dash dash bookmark dash menu, right, to the end of the executable. And what it does is it adds a little button for bookmarks to your to the Chrome toolbar. And it allows you to access those bookmarks that might be in your bookmark bar or elsewhere, you know, from a drop-down menu, which is exactly what you want. So if you're looking for bookmarks and you don't want the bookmark bar taking up all that space, this is a perfect solution for that. And thank you to Sterling for the tip on that one.
Great tip.
All righty.
And now the software pick of the week. Actually, there's two of them, right?
Actually, there's three.
Three.
So I didn't give you one of them.
You're good.
I always hold out one.
Yeah, I like it.
So the first one, this one's kind of neat, and this is in keeping with our Arrow Peak discussion earlier. You know, as you mouse over these buttons in the Windows 7 taskbar, you know, you get that little, thumbnail that comes up. So someone has written a Windows 7 taskbar thumbnail customizer that I think the big deal here is it can change various properties of the thumbnail. But the big one, of course, is the size. So if you're running a very high resolution screen, for example, you might want that thumbnail to be bigger than a postage stamp. You can have it, you know, be much bigger than that. And I've been experimenting with different sizes on this. I'm running a notebook here because I'm on the road. And it's not really a particularly high resolution screen, so I don't want it too big. But, you know, I don't have the greatest eyesight in the world. And actually, I prefer larger thumbnails. So it's a very simple, you run the application, change the size, click apply changes, and then mouse over those thumbnails, and you'll see the changes pretty immediately.
You'd think that'd be something they'd build in.
I know. Such I think a we're going to. Yeah. So there are a lot of utilities like this right now because, you know, Windows 7, especially the taskbar, because it's so new. There's a lot of these little things I didn't really think through, that maybe we'll see in the next version. And these utilities are kind of filling the gap. You know, there are little battery gauge things or, you know, one of the things I get asked about a lot is network animation gauge. Like in earlier versions of Windows, as you were accessing the network, the little network icon would actually change to reflect the fact that you were doing something. You know, the new version doesn't do that. So there are utilities that will, you know, fix that. And, you know, we'll highlight some more of those stuff over the next few weeks, but there's a bunch of little things like this. So this is a cool one. And let's see if I can. Oh, this is from Daniel Smith again. So thank you very much for that recommendation.
I know a Daniel Smith. I wonder if he's related.
it's kind of a common name.
It's a common name. It could be, there could be many Daniel Smiths in the U.S. today.
I don't know. Yeah.
Another pick.
Yeah. The second one. Now this is not a free product, but it's worth mentioning because after talking about this months ago, I've been putting up a series on the Super site about taking the home premium version of Windows 7 and adding hopefully free but low-cost alternatives to some of the features that are available in the professional and ultimate versions to get, you know, to make that product, you know, have the few missing features, you know, things like remote access and so forth, you know, things that just aren't in home premium. Because when you look at the product lineup, you know, home premium is the big jump. You know, when you go from starter to home premium, huge amount of functionality is added. But when you go from home premium to professional, it's a very small set of additional functionality. And when you go from there to ultimate, it's even smaller. You know, there's not that much. But one of the things that's missing from all of the lower end versions of Windows 7, i.e. everything other than Windows 7 Ultimate, is this full disk encryption that you get through BitLocker. And ZoneAlarm has a product now called ZoneAlarm Data Lock, which is a full disk encryption solution. It's $20. So it's sort of like a low cost alternative to BitLocker, certainly cheaper than, you know, upgrading to the Ultimate Edition. So I'm actually running this on my laptop because I like to risk all of my important data when I'm on the road to a product I've never tried before. And, you know, it's really interesting because what it does is, well, obviously it encrypts the entire disk, which means that if you were to take the hard drive out and pop it in a different system, you couldn't just access the data on there, which is nice. But it provides a, you know, one of the limitations of BitLocker, of course, is around the TPM hardware that has to be in the system and so forth. What this does is it actually just uses a passcode. So when you boot up your computer, you have to, through sort of a DOS graphics-like screen, you actually have to log on to get past the encryption. So there's a log on for that. And then, of course, you get to your, you know, the welcome screen, and then you log on to Windows after that. So anytime the system boots, if it goes into hibernation or if you've shut down, you have to log on to get past data lock. And, you know, it appears to work fine. One of the things I've noticed already, though, one of the last things I did before I left on this trip was I wanted to back up the machine to the Windows Home Server. Windows Home Server can't see it now.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So now I don't know that that's completely true, because it's possible I could uninstall the client software and reinstall it now that the encryption's on there and it would work. I just didn't have time to try it. So that software was installed before I encrypted it. So it's possible that that could be made to work, but I'll have to test that when I get back. But this, it wouldn't stop a normal, you know, if you were running Windows 7 backup,
yeah, yeah.
That would work fine.
No, no. Yeah.
But $20, you know, not bad. Seems to work fine. So that looks good.
And finally, and then, a third software pick, just because you're feeling generous.
Right. And this also comes from Joe, you know, the guy that I'm staying with here. This is something I'm curious if you've heard of this. It's called Reportive.
No.
That's an add-in for Chrome and Fireworks. Chrome and Firefox. So if you go to reportive.com, reportive.com, you can find the website for these guys. And what this is a way to replace the ads in Gmail with social networking information about the people that you're looking at the email for in Gmail. So, for example, let me go to Gmail and bring one up.
It's in French.
Is the site in France?
Yeah, so I'll now click English.
I don't know why.
Adaptive reporting, the reportive solution? That? No, maybe I have the wrong... Rapport. Two P's or one?
Two P's. Sorry for that.
No, I think you said it right. I just wasn't paying attention. So like so rapport. Rapport.
You click on email from
making
someone.
Excellent service scale. Simple social CRM built into Gmail.
Yeah. Now.
Neat.
It's actually really neat. So let me just bring up an email from someone that I actually know. So here's an email from a guy named Dave. So what it said over on the right, instead of an ad, what you see is his name, his email, where he's from, his age, is a picture of him that he would have exposed via some social networking service. And then there's going to be a list of services that he signed up for so you can access his information
That's
from those services.
Cool.
So in this case, you see Facebook, Flickr, and MySpace. You know,
very
and then there's...
Nice.
Some information on the bottom, they call it CRM, but basically it's just a way for you to write a note that's private to you about this person, and then that note will appear anytime you get an email from that person. It's a cool little, it's a neat add-on. I'm not necessarily a huge fan of little, you know, 200 add-ons on, you know, Gmail or whatever, but this is...
get ads at all anymore?
Well, you know, you get that column of ads on the right side.
So it just pushes it down.
No, it gets rid of it. So if you you're looking at the webpage now, so you see over on the left side, it says the name of the guy and there's a picture of him. That's actually on the right side. But when you're viewing an email, you know, the body of the email will be in the middle of the screen. And then that column on the right is usually those Google, textual ads. They replace that with this social networking information.
Neato.
Yeah, it's actually really nice. It's a nice presentation. It looks like it was designed to work that way.
Yeah. Huh. Well, I'm just gonna have to this might be my This Week in Google pick of the week.
Yeah, it's a good one.
I love it. Reportive. Let me go to my inbox and just take a look, see what's on the right hand side. Huh. So three tips, all of them wonderful. Yep. Paul McCartney is one of the Beatles, and now is expert on Windows. Many people don't know that.
There you go.
Yeah. And he does this show called Windows Weekly. You didn't know it was the same Paul McCartney, did you? Paul Thurrott, on the other hand, is merely some guy that I met one day, and it's what he does.
Yep, I stalk people.
He stalks people, talks about Windows, mm-hmm. and you can join us. We do this show normally. We're doing a little early today because I'm going to South by Southwest tomorrow, but normally we do this Thursdays at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. On live.twit.tv. Of course, you subscribe to the show. You can go to twit.tv/ww to find out more about that.
So next week, we're at the normal time. Is that right?
We're back. We're norms again.
What is Vegas? Is that mountain time or Pacific? What is Vegas on?
You know, daylight savings time, I think it doesn't observe
this is going to mess everything up.
Yeah.
It's going to mess everything up.
There is this thing called the World Wide Web, and you can go on there, and there, and if you search for, I'm sure Bing will have this.
Tell me what I should type in, because I don't know how to use it.
Time zones.
Time zones.
Then you can figure it all out.
Maybe something like, what is the time zone for
you could
Las
actually
Vegas?
Do that. What time is it in Las Vegas right now? It will tell you.
I told you my daughter's Google story. At Christmas Eve, I brought my daughter into the office. I said, hey, you know, if you go to Google, you can see where Santa Claus is. And she goes, yeah, I know. I said, what, you know? And she said, yeah, I went to Google and I typed in where Santa Claus right now, and it showed me exactly where he was on the NORAD thing. And she had just found it by virtue of making the simplest, you know, plain English search. Yeah.
Where is Santa Claus?
Yep.
That is brought up that so NORAD cool. Tracker.
Yeah, she did it all by herself.
How old is she?
8. That is so this was another parenting moment destroyed by the power of the internet.
Thank God.
Yep.
Thank God for that. That's really neat. Where is Santa Claus? By the way, they still know where he is.
Right. I'm guessing he's in hibernation or something. But anyway, yeah, see, that's the first thing that comes up. It's NORAD, right?
Yeah. That's so neat. Of course, Google had a little something to do with that this year. They
yeah, okay. I'm sure. I'm just saying
it's maps.
It's cool that it
what
works.
What happens if you Bing it? Let's just try it. What do you say? Sure. I'm just curious, you know?
No, Bing is really more about vertical searches.
Yeah. Where is Santa Claus? Well, I'm sure they'll find him. Man, what could go wrong? There's a dead otter on the front page. Or maybe he's just sleeping.
Oh, man. It's a roadkill picture.
I like it that the first suggestion is a misspelled Santa Claus.
Yikes.
Where is Santa Claus? NORAD.
There you go.
And there's actually, see, this is something that Google did not find. There is a site called whereisSantaClausRightNow.com.
Yeah.
But it doesn't tell you where Santa Claus is, which I think is kind of a little deceptive. Yeah. And anytime there's a button that says order now, I'm thinking I'm leaving that site behind.
You've already failed the Christmas IQ test if you're
ordering now.
Yeah.
Look at the dead otter. That's sad. Must be the otter kill is this time of year.
The running of the otters.
The running of the otters. Or is he yawning? I can't tell. Is he sleeping?
What happened to his hand? It's like a fin or something.
He's got a little fin. That's what, one of the things I like. You can go back in time and see what yesterday's search was all about.
The pictures are beautiful.
I love the picture. I think this is actually a really nice idea.
God, if only we could get something like that on Google, you know, I'd probably use it.
Look at that boring white thing. Paul Thurrott is the editor-in-chief of the Supersite for Windows. WinSupersite.com is a place to go for all his writings. It's a great place to keep up on what's going on with Windows in between Windows Weekly episodes. He's also the editor-in-chief of Windows 7 Secrets and soon to be Windows 7 Series Phone Series 7 phones.
That's exactly the book. What we're going to call it. Microsoft Windows Phone 7 Series Secrets. No.
You can't even acronymize that.
I know. It's a... as we call it in the industry.
Secrets. Secrets. I can't wait. So that's exciting. New book.
I wish it was exciting writing a book, but it's
really, you know, you just finished. Is it like having a baby where you just forget the pain and you go on?
I think it has to be.
Must be, because it was so painful, and yet you're doing it again.
I know. Well, I hate myself, so.
Ah, that explains it.
It's in keeping.
I hated myself for 13 books, and then I stopped. Stopped hitting. And it feels so good when you stop. It's like hitting yourself with a hammer. Paul, have a safe travels. We'll talk to you in Vegas next week.
Have a good trip to Austin.
And we'll see you next time on Windows Weekly.